In 2021, the Pietermaritzburg High Court ordered 80 illegal occupiers off a Belita businessman's land behind the Mshlali Business Park next to the old Mshlali station. The court also ordered Kwadukuza Municipality to find them alternative accommodation. The eviction happened, the alternative accommodation did not. Days later, the occupiers moved onto the adjacent land owned by Transnet Freight Rail. Since then, the settlement has grown to an estimated 2,000 people, and it has grown, and so have the problems that come with illegal land invasion. Lack of water, sanitation, and solid waste removal has created challenging living conditions in the settlement. The area is strewn with illegal electricity and water connections. Sewage runs onto public roads. Some structures stand meters from an active railway line. Business owners in Mshlali have been flagging this for years. As the settlement has expanded, the impact on the surrounding businesses has expanded with it. In September last year, they wrote to Transnet collectively calling for urgent intervention. The complaint was escalated internally and referred to Transnet's legal team. A stakeholder meeting was held in October without the municipality present. 7 months on, the situation is unchanged. This week on Uncensored, we unpack the growing crisis with DA Caucus leader and Ward 22 councillor Privy McCann, who is also the DA's Kwadukuza mayoral candidate for the local government elections on the 4th of November. Privy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Penny. And it's great to be on Uncensored. Yes. Thank you for having me on the platform.
Yeah, it's been long overdue.
Absolutely.
So let's start right back from the beginning. So in 2020, you reported to officials that this land was about to be invaded. In fact, I was a local newspaper reporter.
Correct.
And
yes.
we went on the site, and you said the vegetation had already been cleared. And now 5 years later, there are approximately 2,000 people living there. What did the department you warned actually do with that warning?
Penny, I think, taking a step back to the crux of the problem is critical. So it all started around 2019, 2020. So there was a piece of land adjacent to the Transnet site that was occupied. Yeah. And there were 80 families that had invaded that land. You're quite correct in that there was a court order granted. And that court order, the municipality were also respondents. So there were 80 respondents, and the municipality became the 81st respondent. And the municipality automatically becomes a respondent if illegal land invasion happens within their municipal jurisdiction.
Okay.
And it aligns back to what the Constitution says around the provision of housing.
Okay.
The court order had given those invaders up until the 31st of May 2021, I think, to move off that site.
Yes.
And that hadn't happened. And I think you remember, because you covered it quite adequately at the time, where there was public order policing on site that day, and eventually people had moved. But the move didn't happen to further away or to alternate accommodation. Those 80 invaders from that privately owned land very swiftly went and they invaded Transnet land. Immediately afterwards, I alerted Transnet, and I think you were on my ward committee at the time as well. And it was a very robust discussion that we were having as a committee at the time, to say that this was going to brew into a full-blown humanitarian crisis if Transnet didn't take steps at the time to secure their property. Because as a landowner, it is your prerogative to ensure that your property is secured from any illegal invasion. Be that as it may, they didn't take any steps. I alerted the local municipality as well to say that there would be an infrastructure crisis that unfolds from this illegal activity. And that would compound the issue of illegal electricity connections. It would compound the sanitation issue. It would compound the health and safety issue. And unfortunately, 6 years later, or 5.5 years later, that's exactly what has happened. People are living on that property with absolutely no dignity. It is a full-blown humanitarian crisis. Yeah. There's over 500 structures on that site with just absolutely no end in sight or real intervention from Transnet as a landowner.
Yeah, but you know, the electricity, you walk through and you see the illegal connections and the water. Someone, one of the business owners said that they have water connection. Has CESA actually connected that community, or are those also illegal connections?
Absolutely not. CESA Water have not regularized or given water connections. And neither has Kwadugusa, because it is still an illegal settlement.
And it's a state-owned land.
100%.
Yeah, and that is
the responsibility still lies on Transnet to determine what they are doing with that property and if they intend going to court to remove people that have invaded their land.
And now this is the next step with Transnet. Their next step now, I mean, the business community said it has impacted their businesses, obviously with the crime and the urban decay that comes with it, the lack of services, it's on and on and on. Transnet, you know, I did a response to an email. I sent them a whole plethora of questions, and they came back and said it's a legal issue now. Their team is, you know, taking it further. They were supposed to have a meeting that was with Kwadikusa Municipality. They didn't pitch up. They went in the room. What do you know of that?
I don't think that's quite correct. So yeah. there was a meeting that was actually facilitated very, very kindly by the Chamber of Commerce. So the CEO of the Chamber of Commerce, myself, and a few local businesses. And one of them is Hayden Keaton, who's got quite an incredible social housing development just on the other side called Izadla. So that dialogue was actually facilitated by the three of us with Transnet. Transnet representatives flew down. We had a virtual session with Kwadugusa as well to indicate the extent of the problem. Okay. Unfortunately, since then, so there's been two dialogues since then, but nothing concrete from a legal perspective to say, actually, after we've come through, we've taken a site visit, now we've established that we actually have to go to court or this, or whatever their intention is, you know, because I'm not saying that they must go to court.
Well, that's the only legal recourse.
But they are the landowner, so the prerogative would be on them to determine what they're doing with their property and what steps they are going to be taking.
You know,
so there's nothing formal since that.
Okay, so no steps and action taken.
No that's action,
what,
absolutely.
And that's what the business owners have said. They've had 7 months of crickets, really. The community is divided, and you know, land is such a divisive issue. Wherever you stand on whatever side of the line you stand on, whether you're a private property owner or if you're someone who is really battling financially, economically, and you don't have any houses, you know, both sides, I can see both sides. But there's been a lot of, when I put this on our social media platforms, a lot of people said that from their comments that a lot of these homes aren't South African, some are renting these shacks out, and they said, you know, who is living actually on that land? And I do know from just a couple of weeks ago, and you know, from speaking to the community members in that illegal settlement, that they are currently represented by a certain movement. I just want to just touch on it. It's called Abashlali Basim Jondolo. And it actually, I'm going to use ABM as the acronym because it's quite a big one. And it means people who live in shacks in Zulu. And we've referred to it as ABM. And they, the country's largest movement of urban poor. You know, they organize, very popular, and they are emerging with over 500,000 members. And they do represent, you know, informal settlements. So they are the ones who've actually funded these high court eviction orders, because it costs a lot to go to high court and fight a court order eviction. Have you made any contact with them? Have you had any dialogue with them?
So Penny, interestingly, because of the Sheffield informal settlement, which obviously you know the history of, and I think a lot of the listeners probably know the history of that, you know.
Yeah.
The dynamics are a little
just
bit
for
different.
For listeners who don't.
Maybe
just,
I should contextualize it a little bit. So the Sheffield informal settlement, that is a Kwadugusa-owned piece of land. And the land was occupied by around 300 invaders years ago.
Yeah, also about 2019,
around,
even before then.
Yes, a little bit before that. Eventually, the invaders went to court, represented by Abashlali Basim Jondolo. They then won the case in that the municipality then had to ensure that those 300 families became beneficiaries on that housing project. So eventually when that project unfolds, they would become beneficiaries on there, but they're legitimate beneficiaries.
Okay.
You know, they're from within the Kwadugusa municipal jurisdiction. They were on the
housing,
actual beneficiary
okay.
list. But during that time and up to now, I've ended up building quite a cordial working relationship with Abahlali Basamjondol. And I think the perception needs to be clarified publicly. You know, there's this perception that they're an aggressive movement.
Radical's the word they use.
Aggressive movement, when actually what they are is that they're an advocacy organization championing the rights of marginalized communities, specifically around dignity and housing. So I think that perception needs to be clarified. And in fact, when we go in the course of this interview, maybe to an action step as a way forward, I'd really like to expand on that a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, that's the one side of the coin. The other side, the other argument is that of facilitating illegal land occupation, because the land that we're seeing, and this is just one isolated case, this is happening all around our region, and some of the housing projects are stalled because of the illegal invaders, and the court has tied up, you know, the system, because now you can't just evict anyone. You have to go to court. You
Absolutely.
Have to apply with the eviction, and we've seen it unfolding so many times. It's costly, and a lot of the Kwadukusa municipalities using money now to fight these legal battles, stalling a lot of the housing projects. So while I understand they are representing, you know, the shack dwellers movement, and they are very actively, you know, fighting for the rights of the poor who have, how is this for the benefit of our community? Because what we're seeing now is impacting a lot of the ratepayers in the community and a lot of the business owners.
So I think, Penny, the one thing we must be absolutely implicitly clear on, that dignity, it can't come at the expense of illegal occupation.
Yes.
We must be very, very clear about that, that the rule of law has to be upheld. And the truth about Kwadugusa, because of where we are economically positioned, is that the rate of economic migration is growing at an exponential rate.
That's what's it's facilitated.
Absolutely,
this.
Absolutely, because people are moving here for economic opportunities, but there's still the housing crisis. People want to be close to economic opportunities, but simply can't pay 60 rand a day to get into a taxi and go back to the outlying more rural areas.
A lot of the people at Abahlali apparently are from the Eastern Cape.
And there's a broader dialogue that does need to happen around how we fix the housing crisis.
Yeah.
But also the responsibility can't simply be shifted onto local municipalities.
Yeah. Because Kwadukusa was actually ordered by the court to facilitate housing and move those people to, and they came back and said, you know what, we can't help these people because we actually have already a housing backlog, and they must enter, you know, their names on it.
I think secondary to just the housing backlog is that, you know, some municipalities may be housing accredited service providers or implementing agents, like Kwadugusa.
What does
is.
That mean for so, listeners who don't
so
understand?
So basically what it is some local municipalities, but more metros actually, the provincial or national government actually give them a mandate to implement a housing project.
Yeah.
But the purchase of that land, the funding to build the top structures, the money comes from a national and a provincial level.
Okay.
Because that burden of building houses and acquiring land, that burden can't be passed on to ratepayers, because that's a reality. Because if a municipality then is an independent housing accredited service provider and is expected to provide housing, the money has to come from somewhere.
Yeah.
And it can't come from the ratepayers. So currently in the Kwadugusa environment, the money comes from a provincial and a national level. So provincial government, Department of Human Settlements, will through the intergovernmental relationship with Kwadugusa, acquire a piece of land, facilitate that transaction, and provide the money for building. Kwadugusa will then implement the planning of it, because obviously you've got a planning department to do all the feasibility studies and all of that. But that money has to come from somewhere. And in the Kwadugusa context, the reason we have so many stalled and blocked housing projects is simply because there has been no more money. Well, certainly in my term of office, I haven't seen any housing projects fully unlocked because there simply has been no money being passed from the province to a local level in order for those projects to be executed.
Yeah.
The one that we have seen some funding come through for is the Sheffield housing project, but that is because they're an informal settlement, and this is for the informal settlement upgrade. So it's to provide the roads and your basic services until the project can actually unfold.
I mean, there's also another caveat. You can say that they receive the funding, but the municipality actually doesn't manage it properly, and the funding goes into deep holes of whoever they...
Well, Rocky Park is case in point, isn't it?
That's another debate. So what we're seeing now is the backlog now, with the formal housing backlog. Where do we stand? So you've got... This is like 2,000 odd people living in this informal settlement. What is the resolution now? They're saying, Kwadukusa is saying there's a massive housing backlog. We don't have the budget to accommodate these people. What is ABM saying? They want this informal settlement to be formalized. What are they actually proposing when you've come to the table then?
So Penny, on the Transnet housing settlement, yes. I haven't had a formal dialogue with ABM on that. And that's what I want to propose as a way forward.
Yeah.
Because obviously there's a big impact to the business community.
Yeah.
There's an impact to the families that are on that site now. And obviously a broader impact to the residents across Kwadukusa. And maybe as a way forward, it would be to facilitate a dialogue between Transnet, firstly, to find out what their actual intention is, what action steps they've taken, and what is the way forward. Then to obviously conduct an audit on that piece of land to establish who on there is actually forming part of the Kwadukusa housing beneficiary register. Because we've also got to be, clear about it. If you are on a housing beneficiary register on the Eastern Cape, for example, you simply can't be on a beneficiary register in Kwadukusa as well.
And it's also putting a lot of strain locally, because we've got our employment rate is massive, and a lot of the locals are saying, all these people are coming from the outside and they're taking up our jobs. And obviously, the housing is an issue, so that don't want to pay the taxis, and then they put up these checks. And then there's a lot of, on the other side, there's a criminal element that is taking advantage of
this,
because they go in there, they build these structures, and then they rent them out.
Or sell it.
Yeah. Or they become rent. And I am in Chaka's head. That's another story, but that's very rampant. I mean, I've seen someone who's got 12 units that he rents out. Now, if you're renting them out at 400 to 800 rand a unit, that's how much these people are paying, to stay there. You're making a pretty penny each month. So there's almost another underlying side to this.
And I think as with anything, I'm actually reading a book at the moment, which is very good. It's by Carl Cohen, who's quite a popular journalist, and it's called Mafia Land.
Absolutely.
And in every single sphere of society, you're finding elements of this,
And
so there's always an underlying element to whatever we're seeing at the surface,
And then there's obviously a lot of the political commentators have said that ABM, while they represent the rights of the people, are a movement that's actually destabilized. They caused on purpose, possibly. They are saying that it's destabilizing government, and you see them every time there's a court eviction, the municipality gets locked into it. There's massive marches. They do a lot of protesting because, obviously,
and, Penny, I think that's why this amendment to the PIE Act.
Yes, can we bring that in?
Very briefly, obviously, because I'm not a legal expert. But as as the DA, we've always championed property rights.
Yeah.
And there's nothing populist about upholding the rule of law. And that's why we've always said that we must be a party that's at the forefront of upholding the rule of law.
Yeah.
And in the amendment, there's two things that are quite critical. And the one is criminalizing the incitement of land invasion, because historically that's never happened. And it goes back to that point that you made about this underlying element that is there, because there is a criminal element, but the incitement thereof has never been criminalized. And that's what the PIE Amendment Act seeks to do. And the other thing that it's going to seek to do, which I think is critical for property owners, is to provide a time frame in terms of that alternate accommodation component. Because often when you go to to court and then you ask to evict people, you know, the court will say you must provide alternate accommodation as a property owner. But to what end?
Yeah.
Do you indefinitely provide alternate accommodation? And the amendment is now saying that it must be for a specified time frame. And that's why I'm saying, as a DA, we've always championed the rights of property owners.
Yeah.
And it's a broader dialogue that we need to take forward, though, because, like I said, there's so many complexities and components to this, social, economic, and I think that
Property rights as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean,
absolutely.
From the economy, because you obviously property rights are such an important right to protect.
They're
yes. North Coast is growing in such a massive way with tourism and businesses. So to bring it locally now, and we're going to have to end, where do we stand from here? The business owners are wanting some sort of action from Transnet. Transnet said they can't get too much involved in speaking about it because now it's becoming a legal matter. So we love that phrase.
I will say, Penny, I think it's a little bit unfair that Transnet are taking this position and divorcing themselves from their own responsibility.
Absolutely.
Which is an incorrect position.
And they should have secured the land in the beginning.
Absolutely.
When the warning signs were there.
It's your responsibility as a property owner,
absolutely.
You know. Irrespective of you being an SOE and you've got thousands of properties across the country, you have to take some steps to secure. But I think, Penny, as a way forward, you know, I'm not going to sit here and promise to the residents that there's going to be an immediate solution. But the dialogue does need to start happening now from a critical perspective.
Yeah.
Firstly, I'm going to establish from Transnet where they are with this legal process and if, in fact, there actually is one. Second to that, there needs to be an audit done on that property, like I said to you, of the number of people that are there. Additionally, who forms part of a housing beneficiary register in Kwadugusa? I think that's also central to a way forward. And I think a multi-stakeholder engagement, and I know the term is used so broadly in government,
but never ever
translates to anything. But I do think that there are so many stakeholders and partners that could offer something, a solution to this crisis. For example, Abatlali Basom Jondol, I believe that they are critical to this engagement.
In what way do you think?
Because they already represent the rights of so many people within the broader community, not just Transnet. I mean, you know, they represent people in Shaka's Head, in Sheffield, in Itete. I think that they are central to this dialogue. I believe that the local business owners are central to this dialogue. I believe developers who have already found social housing interventions, such as Hayden Keaton, for example, who's done the Idladla concept, and obviously the local municipality. So I'm very, very keen to facilitate this.
Yeah.
It's not an election promise, I can assure you, because it is an issue that I've been driving for the last few years. But I think that is a proposed interim way forward. And obviously to provide more regular feedback to the community.
Yeah, and I think that's what the business community want. They want to know that their concerns have been tabled and they are heard. Because right now, I mean, I looked at the email trails between them and Transnet. Transnet, countless times, they said, please can we have a response? Please can we have a response? And they were completely ignored. And then the minute I asked them for a request for comment, saying that I will publicly say what their response is, then they came back to me with that. So I think the responsibility as, you know, the landowner, Transnet has to play an integral role in trying
central
to solve
to this
issue. And just one last thing, you know, in our previous reporting, we said, Kwadikusa has mentioned Fluxbraid. You know, it's like this word, like every housing development that's going to solve the issue, everyone's going to be going to Fluxbraid. And I've been to Fluxbraid. Let me tell you, there is nothing happening there. So I'm not sure if this unicorn is going to suddenly, you know, manifest and we're going to solve our issues.
Maybe the question should be, Penny, where's the money going to come from for Fluxbraid? Because it goes back to the point I made earlier. So the province have purchased this big, vast piece of land.
Yeah, long time ago.
Long time ago.
10 years ago.
Probably longer, I think 2011.
Okay.
Yes, I think it was around 2011.
Yeah, it's got no services.
No services.
Nothing.
So where is that going to come from?
And it's like a long way away. So people have to then commute.
It's going to be the same issue. It's the transport
and
economic
idea.
Migration issue is still going to be there.
Almost feels privy hopeless. You know, I look at this and, you know, I listen to the businessmen and women you know, tabling their concerns. I listened to the community. I've been there. I've seen the conditions the they're also living in. It's such a socioeconomic problem as well. And then I listened to Kwadukuza, who keeps saying they've got no money. This budget is just, you know, it's very scarce. And then the poor ratepayers, who are now burdened with above inflation increases coming. So do you think, you know, going forward in your career, there's some positivity?
Absolutely. I want to say two things, Penny. Okay, the first one is around the budget. I would love to come through.
Yes, we will have a discussion
about
the
budget after
it gets tabled next week.
Next Thursday, yes. But I also want to say, you know, I get that it feels like a really, really hopeless situation right now. But I want to make a big appeal. Don't give up on Kwadukuza, because it really is an area with so much potential. And there are people that are fighting to save this municipality.
You've got a lovely community.
Absolutely.
Hey?
Yeah. And I think there's so much intention. There's so much good intention here, whether it's from community, whether it's from business, whether it's from the opposition political parties.
Yes.
Just don't give up on Kwadukuza. We've got a huge opportunity this year to fix the political status quo, to change it.
Yeah.
Big voter registration weekend coming up on the 20th of June.
Very important.
And then election day, I think 164 days until
the
local government election.
Yeah.
So just don't give up, people of Kwadukuza.
I hope so, because I'm quietly hopeful. I'm watching and I'm quietly hopeful. I think there's a massive potential in that area, and we've got an amazing community.
Absolutely.
So we're going to keep on this. We're going to be tracking how this moves on, and we're going to be updating you. But we're going to be back to discuss the budget.
Yes,
thank
definitely.
You, Privy.
Thank
Appreciate
you, Penny.
Your time.
Thanks.
When it comes to security, don't leave it to chance. Trust the experts at IPSS Security. As the only CISA-approved security provider on the Dolphin Coast in all categories and the only local security company also accredited for CCTV off-site monitoring with over 4 million rand invested in AI technology, they protect over 50 upmarket residential estates, spotting threats in real time. If action is needed, their rapid response and tactical teams, backed by the largest fleet in the region, is ready to act. For unmatched security, contact IPSS Security today at 0861 324 777. Your safety is their priority.